I want to speak today about a theme which I find is reoccurring again and again in the media nowadays, is reoccurring in people's lives, and I think we should discuss it quite fully because not only is it interesting, it's relevant. Now, this theme deals with life that goes on despite the situation of the body. Now, naturally, the physical body is a very important vehicle, is a very important part of our existence, but life is not tied to it, as we all know. Life is certainly existing despite the situation of the body. Before we were born, after we are born, our spiritual energy continues on. This we all know. Now, although it is easy to understand the eternality of the living energy, it is difficult to understand the situation of the living energy when it is not situated in this body. And more people are becoming less satisfied with the idea of heaven and hell, or simplistic understandings about the locations of living entities when they are no longer alive in the physical plane, or rather visible to us. Now, heaven and hell are not necessarily fictional places. We can, of course, create our own heaven. We can, of course, create our own hell, and we often do. But I didn't really want to speak about those kinds of understandings of the other side. I don't really want to get into an analysis of it or a critique of it. I want to discuss more of the mechanisms by which life continues when it is not bound by this body. Now, if you think about it, when we are in this body, our energy mainly is manifesting through these physical, through the physical aspects of our being, our arms, our legs, our hands, our senses, and the mind, and to a certain extent, our heart. And predominantly, we relate all of the aspects of our actions, all of the aspects of our understanding and our consciousness through the body. The body is the central point through which all of our consciousness will manifest, all of our perceptions will take place. And this even continues when you don't have to do it like that. And I'd like to give you an example of that, just to clarify. I know that when I do energy work or I do healing work, that I don't have to use my hands, for instance. I don't have to use my body. I don't have to put it in any particular place to use my energy. Theoretically, I could simply sit wherever I am and use my energy as it is without having to use it through my hands or through any physical aspect. I don't have to stand over somebody. I can just allow my energy to flow as if I were using my hands or standing somewhere. Now, the reason I said theoretically is because practically, that's very difficult to do. In fact, it takes such a lot of work to do that, that it takes away from the capacity to perform the service that I wish to perform. Now, I don't know exactly how to explain that better. Oh, by the way, this is going to be a very mystical kind of a discussion today. So don't expect too much analysis here. You know, sometimes I get bored with all this analysis. I get bored with all this, you know, having to categorize and define and speak about things philosophically. And sometimes I just like to talk about existence or my experiences in existence. So I hope you don't mind that today. So if I was going to do some kind of service for somebody, even were it to be over a distance, I find that using my hands, using my body facilitates my power. In other words, even if somebody that I work on is thousands of miles away, I will still want to use my hands, make a cleansing, and send away all the bad energies and put in good energies and do something specific. I'd like to be physically engaged in that. Now, I know, as I've said before, that's not necessary. I could simply sit in meditation and do the exact same thing, because I mean, after all, my hands are not part of the process of energy exchange, because the person being exchanged with is far away anyway, not near my hands. Now, I'm sure that theoretically, again, in the future, perhaps healing could be done by departing from the body, moving to the place where the person needs healing, and actually working on them in that way. Yet in reality, in practical experience, it doesn't work like that. And it's very interesting why. Recently, João de Deus, that famous Brazilian healer, he came to Atlanta, which is about 5 hours from here. And his example I'll give right now, because it demonstrates just what I'm talking about. Now, according to those who describe him, he is working with four doctors who are discarnate beings who have been working for the good of humanity from that other side, who have been using their medical capacities to heal people, and a lot of people had very good results. Yet, João de Deus uses his hands, he uses instruments, he does things. We also see the same thing with the Filipino healers who are also working with spirit. They also use physical interactions. Now, if, as we know, such discarnate, I use such a word, it's such a lousy word, if spirit helpers are working, why can't they just work directly? Why do they need to work through somebody? I mean, after all, they are the ones with the power, they are the ones with the energy. Why don't they directly work on people? Well, in fact, there are instances, even in João de Deus' example, afterwards you get continued healing from angels of light. But it had to be initiated first within that atmosphere. You had to make some kind of connection. And that kind of interaction is more on the platform of supporting us, more on the platform of supporting and giving us strength to continue with the healing process. It is not specifically meant for just initiating a new form of healing. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's not possible to have a direct spiritual experience, either in healing or being saved by an angel when you should have been in an accident, or some kind of intervention from the other side that was very powerful, very important. I'm not saying that's not possible. It happens. It happens. But what I am saying is the usual way in which this interaction takes place, at least amongst those who have been recognized to some extent for their capacities, is with the interface of the body. And I find that important, and I'm going to discuss that more. I know for me, making a motion that would be parallel or similar to one I would do in a similar circumstance where the person to be actually in front of me focuses my energy, focuses my attention, and makes the activity very real. Now, naturally, this is part of the visualization. This is part of the task we have to go through when we're doing a kind of a work which is not directly connected with a physical interaction. Now, this kind of a feeling focuses the visualization. It empowers the visualization. It makes it real, because what it does is it connects us to that kind of an activity we are familiar with in the majority of time we spend in life. Now, of course, we do sleep and we dream, and that's not connected in that way. However, the majority of what we do are actual physical activities and interactions. And when we visualize non-physical transferal of energy, when we do it through the medium of that which we are very familiar with, it actually becomes more powerful. Now, I know that sometimes we think the body is not really so important. It's a vehicle, it's a tool. The real thing is the energy. We can sit in meditation, we can sit in prayer, we can sit in contemplation, and all of these significant activities are taking place on the level of the spirit. I know that thought is there. But when it comes right down to it, we feel most connected when we're interacting with our consciousness, with all of our being. And that demonstrates to some extent that our energy feels comfortable flowing through this body. It is not something we feel uncomfortable with. Our energy feels comfortable with our bodies. Our energy feels comfortable with the way in which our bodies can manifest our will, can manifest our consciousness. And that is something we have to accept and deal with, because when you work against it, you get in trouble. Now, sometimes people don't like to deal with that. They want to work oppositely to that nature of energy flowing through the body. They like to simply skip the body. They like to somehow or another, perhaps through the mind, working through the mind or through some idea, somehow disassociate the body and their energy. Usually they get in trouble, sickness or other kinds of difficulty. Now, when you have that kind of a situation of denial of the flow of the energy, you're working against yourself. That's not very advantageous. But we're not going to discuss that more in detail. We've done that before. In reality, it's kind of obvious to us. It's kind of self-evident that working in cooperation, in harmony with our entire being, naturally will allow us to focus our energy in the clearest manner. Now, I've been explaining this because I want to connect this with the experiences of some of the beings on the other side. Now, when we speak about the other side, we have to be a little bit clear about how we're using this term, because it could be misinterpreted. So I will use it in the following way, because I don't think there's an absolute definition. Those beings who were once living in the physical form have departed from the physical form and have not yet entered back into the physical form by taking rebirth. I'm not going to put in the other side definition personalities who work to manage the universe, the devas, or other angelic beings. They're not on the other side. They're in dimensional spaces which are within our connected reality, our matrix of existence. Now, naturally, you can define things as you like, especially if you're the one giving this discussion, but it seems to me somewhat egoistic and therefore not valid to say there's us here living and then there's everything else on the other side. It seems to make a wall between us and them. Now, I don't like the idea, and I've been discussing that again and again, of making such kind of a division, that there's us of the consciousness that is perceivable, so to speak, and then there's those of the consciousness who is not perceivable, because that's just an arbitrary delineation. It doesn't really help us to expand our power. Ugh. I almost sneezed. I didn't want to interrupt your translation. So, I therefore would like to categorize it a little bit differently, because when we speak about the other side, we mean about the transitional personalities who have, or the personalities who are in transition, who have moved from this plane through to the other plane and have not yet integrated within the, shall we say, more permanent or more established aspects of activity. I'll have to explain that better. Now, I could have gotten myself in big trouble with that last statement, and now I'm going to have to explain in much more detail, and that's good. We're dealing here with, for example, let's take some deva like Agni or Chandra. They are very well situated, engaged. They perform actions. They do things. They're as well situated in their own particular way as we are. They have their duration of life as we do. They have their activities, their place of action as we do. It's a rather, shall we say, solid situation. Now let's take away the factor of time, the fact that devas live extraordinarily longer than we do. And even amongst us, some live longer and so. Let's just take away the factor of time. We're talking about a situation which can be perceived either by ourselves or by others as being a regular, normal, continuous, and something you can count on, somewhat stable kind of an existence. Now, when you have personalities who depart from this physical body and move to the other side, there can be situations where they're not exactly in that kind of a category. And that's who we're speaking about. Amongst those who have moved through, made the transition, some of them are in the in-between life stage. They are together with their groups of other similar souls. They are rejuvenating. They are in quite a secure situation. Some of them are going through the process of understanding the actions in their life, understanding their desires, their defects, their good qualities, that which they need to learn, and thus preparing to take birth again. Such persons are going through a process which is bringing them from one life to the other, and it's in a kind of a homogeneous, connected fashion. The activities within the body, the activities that will take place in the next body, are connected with desires, connected with experiences and expectations, and the desire to do better. And therefore, they are all connected with the body somehow or another, even if it's from one body to the other. The body is a kind of, shall we say, linking factor, or a body. Now, that's an important point because of the next category of person. Those who have moved through to the other side, yet are somehow or another stuck. They're bound. There is something which is holding them back. Now, that which is holding them back is related to the body, because their energy was manifesting through the body, and there was some kind of a disturbance in that life which had to be dealt with. Some kind of entanglement, some kind of a situation which forced the persons to deal with it when they did pass to the other side. And until they dealt with it, they were not capable of moving on into the more normal processes which bring them into another body. Now, those personalities have been given the name ghosts. They have been given that name, which is now filled with feelings of uncomfortableness. We're very uncomfortable with such feeling, with such personalities. We're very uncomfortable with the idea. Now, it's quite interesting because even a person who is eager to assist others, eager to help others, eager to do things in this lifetime, when they're feeling that energy of some disembodied being, they are upset with it. They're very uncomfortable with it. They don't really want to have anything to do with it. They try to push it away. Now, just think about it for a second. When you are, this, by the way, this is only one aspect of the discussion, but it's an important one, so I'm going to have to go through it. Now, let's say some person was in pain, or even a child was screaming and came running to you. Your first inclination would be to find out what's wrong so you can do something about it, because there's obviously this call of pain or help. You would naturally want to do something. You wouldn't just say, oh, get away. You're bothering me with your screaming, with your energy, because it can be quite hysterical sometimes. And the reason why you can do that is because you have a physical being who is emitting a sound which is within the range of familiarity. You've heard it before. You know that that sound can be associated with something that needs to be dealt with. And therefore, your mind puts it all together and then asks you to deal with it, because this is something that can be dealt with. Now, let's just take two examples here. Someone that you love and someone that you don't know. Someone that you love may come to you and not exactly express something with words, maybe even not even express it with actions. But some, if there's some real incredible disturbance in them, you just feel it very strongly. And even though that feeling is very strong and you feel very badly about it, in other words, it feels like something really serious is there, you don't just throw it away and reject it. You reach out to try to find out what's wrong so you can do something to help the person. Especially if it's something that's quite hysterical in its energetic manifestation. You immediately feel it. Now let's take the example of somebody you don't know at all. If that person were to come in your association, even if you were alone, and for some reason they weren't capable of just repressing it totally so you wouldn't feel it, yet they had the same kind of a feeling of a hysteria or just some incredible need, you would feel it, but in a different way. You would feel it in a manner which would be quite different, because first of all, you don't know the person. Second of all, you haven't agreed to accept that energy. Third of all, you're accepting it because you have no choice. This person's just broadcasting it to you. Now it becomes very complicated. You're going to have to, you've never spoken to the person before, but you're going to have to ask them what's wrong. And then you even have to volunteer, can I be of assistance? And when you don't know somebody, this is a very big step. Now, when you are in a store or in a public transportation or anywhere, and you come across such kinds of feelings, you just avoid the person. You try to be as far away as possible, because the first inclination of people is to not get involved. Now, trained professionals have really no problem dealing with such kinds of people, because they go into their professional mode. They then inquire from the person about what's wrong, because that's their job. They're going to get paid for it. So they accept that type of attitude so they can understand what's wrong and deal with it. But a professional who's not being paid for a service, for example, who happens to run into this situation while they're in the grocery store, is not going to make that endeavor. They will be just like anyone else and try to just avoid the situation. Now, the exact same situation is there with, if you were to compare, a person you don't know who has that kind of hysterical need and a person who has moved to the other side who also has it, yet has even a harder time to make a connection to you. And the first inclination of a person is to say, Oh, that's horrible. Go away, go away. You're not even sure what it is, but you just know something very bad. You don't want to have anything to do with it. Now just think about this example for a second. Just put yourself in your mind, visualize yourself having just died, maybe not even being aware of it. And that's an interesting point. Maybe you're not even aware of it. And you're trying to reach out to your friends or your relatives or your wife or husband or children. It's interesting to put ourselves in this situation because there is a possibility we could be in this situation. But whether we could or not is not important. But let's say somehow or another you died in a way in which you're not really aware of it. You don't really remember the act of dying. So here you are, looking the same to yourself, feeling the same, but in another way. You look down, you see your hands, you see your body. Of course, if you were to look in a mirror, you wouldn't see yourself. But as far as you're concerned, you're there. The shall we call it, psychic form follows with us. This subtle form follows with us. Even if we were in a car crash and got all squished, that form left the body in its intact form. So when you look at yourself, you are looking the same. Now, such a person has quite some difficulty. They are, as far as they are concerned, the same person. However, they have some difficulties here because when they go to other persons, even those they love are repulsed by them, are ignoring them. There's nothing worse than being ignored by someone you love. Just imagine you're trying to talk to your wife or husband or mother or father or children, and they don't make any response. It's as if you're not there at all. Just imagine how you would feel. Now, this is quite different from those personalities who are on the other side, who know they are on the other side, and who come back to support you or to make sure that you're doing okay with their departure. They haven't moved on because they wanted to make sure that you are okay. They have such love. They're just concerned for you, and therefore they're just making sure. And when they know that you're okay, they'll move on. But then there are those who need to resolve something with you. There's something they need to either tell you, or that you should know, or they have a confession, or they want revenge, or something. But you would probably be very surprised to know that there's much less of this idea of revenge than you would imagine. Because, again, for those who know they have died, they have a kind of a vision or a viewpoint which reduces to a large extent that need to right now get revenge. They are aware that they don't have the capacity to really cause that revenge. So therefore, they simply deal with those situations they have to deal with, move through to a new life where they'll be able to manifest the revenge. As they said, revenge is best served cold. That means that revenge tastes best when you are no longer passionate about getting it. Now, those persons who have to deal with something in this world, they're the ones who have the most trouble, and they're the ones who need our sensitivity the most. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to go off onto the topic of psychic energy for a moment to clarify this point. Now, the word psychic, I feel, is not a good word. It's a word which doesn't really explain the phenomena it tries to explain. Now, I know someone might say, well, it's just a name. It's a label. It's not an explanation. Yet, if you think about it, many times labels turn into definitions, turn into explanations just because of the way they are used. Now, I don't like the word psychic because psychic is kind of a cold word. It's a word which makes one think generally of kind of a mental thing. In fact, even sometimes they're called mentalists. It implies mental powers, cold kinds of mental powers and capacities to see, which can often be just a passive thing, seeing. So I like the way the word is used in Russia. They is used the word sensitive. A person's a sensitive. That is far, a far superior way to speak about it. And I'd like to explain that a little more. The idea of being sensitive to the extreme, where your sensitivity is so great that it transcends the physical plane. Now, there are many different forms of sensitivity, and they can be divided into categories. There are those who are extremely sensitive in a visual way. That is not necessarily the most common grouping. They have the capacity to see things, pictures, images, either locally or remotely or anywhere, that others cannot. There are those who are sensitive in an extreme way, more sensitive to audio impetus. They hear either within them, as if their very soul was hearing, or even they hear things which others can't hear, which are around them, and they're not even sure if they heard it with the ear or within the inner ear. They hear what is spoken to them from other platforms, or they hear what others are saying, even when they're not speaking it. And then there are those who are extraordinarily sensitive to feelings. They perceive feelings about things. They just have a feeling about what's happening. They can feel directly the energy as if they were feeling heat or feeling cold. They are feeling that energy, which has a consciousness and an information flow within it. And then there are those who just know. They can't even explain to you how. They're not like reaching out for a source of knowledge. They're not like connecting and hearing or seeing, or they just know. And if you ask them, how do you know? They may just go, I don't know, I just know. More rarely, there are those who have sensitive smell, sensitive taste, sensitive touch. I don't mean in the feeling of the sense of getting an energetic touch, but they actually feel the touch of others from beyond. But these are more rare. I can tell you something funny. I mean, I have this problem that sometimes when I'm standing in my shorts or something, all of a sudden I will feel this little dog come and touch me with his nose on my leg. When I look down, there's nobody there. And I'm always like scratching my head. Now, which dog was that? Was that my dog with his incredible capacities? Or was that some other departed dog? Which dog was that? And it's very consistent. It's not like, all right, maybe I'm a little nutty, but I just thought I'd tell you. Now, somebody can be very, very sensitive in one way and not in another. Like say, somebody may be very sensitive for hearing. Another may be very sensitive for seeing. Like, for example, those who look within a crystal ball or something like that. They see an image. Nostradamus used to do that. He used to have this fire and see within the fire. They were visually based persons. Then there are those who just listen and hear. They may not have a multiple methodology by which they communicate or which their consciousness may go to the other sides or other dimensions. I know I've had some people complain to me when we do meditations or whatever. They say, oh, I can't see anything. I can't see anything. I mean, I'm not capable. I'm not sensitive. I'm just dull. I don't see anything. And they're actually selling themselves short, because seeing isn't everything. Some people just don't see. Yet they're incredibly sensitive. They may hear. And yet, because they've got this impression of themselves as being dull because they can't see. Even when they hear, they don't listen. And then there are those who don't hear and don't see, yet they feel, but they don't accept their feelings. They disassociate themselves from their feelings. They take a step away from their feelings, and therefore they lose all that wonderful connection. And then there are those who just know and can't believe it. They say, well, I don't have any reason to know, therefore I can't know. And they don't have any faith in themselves, even though they do know. Let's take the case of somebody who hears or feels and use that as an example of how you can completely screw up your own capacities. Let's say somebody's trying to communicate with you and says something, and then you kind of like hear it and then go, oh, that was just my imagination. You just forget about it. You ignore it. And again, you make the same response to ignore it, to not believe it, to ignore it. At one point, the persons who are trying to communicate with you will just give up, or they will just move away and hope that in the future you will want to hear. This happens to most children. Most children learn to ignore their capacities for perception due to their association with adults who have chosen to ignore their capacities for perception. Because they learn through this association that this is not normal, and they want to be normal so they can be accepted, acknowledged, and loved. So all of our natural, incredible capacities get suppressed very, very early in life. And we forget them. However, besides the fact of those who lived in sensitive families who never saw a reason to forget them, but for those who did forget them, they're not lost. And the way to reestablish yourself with those capacities, which are natural to everybody, is to stop ignoring. Now, all you have to do, all anyone has to do, is latch on to one particular capacity that has been repressed the least. You don't repress everything equally. You repress things in different ways according to the stimuluses you have experienced in your life. Therefore, amongst all of these capacities that we just described, one of them, at least, will be repressed less, just by the law of averages, than the others. Maybe those who don't want to see have repressed that the most, but because of that, they've neglected to repress hearing, for example, or feeling, for example. Remember, it is us who have placed these veils of ignorance on ourselves. They have not come from the outside. We've just embraced them and placed them upon ourselves. So we have to discover, amongst all of those repressed things, which one has a little spark of life? Because if you don't have any of them, you're pretty dead. And the way you do that is by making a declaration. And that declaration is, I shall no longer repress my capacities, number one. Number two, I shall now make an extra special endeavor to be aware of what information is coming to me and not reject any of it. And to just catch on to where information is coming from. Now, this is not so easy because you've got to go from this totally repressed state to just find a spark somewhere. This is like the first major step. But once that step is made, fanning the fire of that spark is guaranteed to work because that flame is the soul, that flame is the spirit. It's definitely got power. You just got to keep it going, encourage it, let it manifest. So making that first step means, number one, having faith in yourself, believing in yourself, all of these things that are part of all the stuff we've been talking about for years now. But when one just allows oneself to capture that spark in any of those four categories we discussed, we can move forward. And don't forget that within that meditative state of complete relaxation, of complete letting go, you are most potentially capable of just discovering the spark. Not by looking at it, by just letting it spark before you. Just like for seeing an aura of a person, you can't look directly at them. Because when you do, your eyes, just simply by the nature of eyes, focus on their form, the detail of it, the line, the outline. You just focus on them in a way which makes your perception or the perceptional capacity, the neurons in your nervous system that connect to your brain, see the object. But when you just look just slightly, how would you describe it? Slightly off center, slightly to the side, or slightly not directly to the person, where your eyes are focused on something physical in the person, but you're just slightly focused a little bit other way, you can start to see their energy. And then, because your energetic eye is seeing, and that's best done not in full light, but in subdued light, because light itself is that which activates the eye. So when there's too much light, your capacity to see energetically becomes reduced. But that's not exactly the kind of sensitivity of visual experience that I was talking about before, because that kind of visual experience is where an image will appear. An image will manifest, either being sent to you by someone else or something within your own history or even in lifetimes. And in that state of great relaxation you can enter into, that meditative state of great relaxation where you let everything go, you may hear even just a phrase or even just one word. If you respond to it, if you move with it, if you accept it, you acknowledge it, there is an enormous capacity that it will continue, it will expand, it will go on more. Now, I understand this is kind of difficult to deal with. That first step is the most difficult to deal with. Therefore, some people find it more advantageous to take some object from another person, the psychometry we talked about once, which only they've used, which is capable of storing vibrations, like metal. Metal is very good, or a piece of clothing is very good. And just go into meditative state and just try to connect and just say anything that comes into your mind. Now, what's most interesting about our capacity to repress is that we don't believe what we hear. We don't believe what we feel. We don't believe what we see. And when you do this, like, for example, with friends, no money involved, no expectation involved, like a game. You take something from a friend, you just try it with a friend, and you just say whatever comes into your mind. You then have no risk about being wrong, because it's a game. And when you allow yourself to perceive like that, because there's no risk involved, there's no fear, you allow yourself to, however it comes to you, as a knowing, as a hearing, as a seeing, as a feeling, you will uncover your entranceway into these capacities. And when you uncover these capacities, when you uncover your ability to find your spark, you can then fan it by doing this more, trying it again, always without commitment, without expectation, without taking anything from anybody, just simply as a game, simply as a practice, simply as an experience. You will build up your capacity until people are being amazed at what you can do. And when you can do like that, you will find that you will have an enormous capacity to find yourself. And when you can find yourself like that, you'll be able to then be of great service. You'll be able to be of service to people in this world by hearing what they don't say, by seeing what you can't see, by feeling what you need to feel, and thus responding to people on the level of what they really need rather than what they say they need. And when you do that, what happens is that you no longer make a distinction between those who are physically on this manifested plane and those who are on another plane. You don't reject the disembodied or those who are not in bodies that you can perceive. You relate with all equally. Now, if you have this experience, for example, of always feeling a presence around you, it almost certainly is because that personality has something that you should know, something to communicate to you. And it's in your best interests to receive the communication. If you consider that communication to be an annoyance, if you consider it a waste of time, if you consider it something you should ignore, well, you've done two disservices. Number one, it's probably something you really should know. And number two, you're frustrating, like anything, the personality who's trying to communicate with it, communicate it to you, and preventing them from moving on. Now, that's not good from anybody's point of view, because it doesn't help you, doesn't help them. It's just making a disturbance. And in fact, that disturbance can flow over into other members of your family or other people that you know, because you're not dealing with something you should deal with. And what you resist persists. Absolutely. There is something to be learned. There's something to be known. There's some growth that has to take place. So either you can resist it, ignore it, work against it, and get frustrated, or you can go with it and discover there's no harm in trying to figure things out. It's good for you. Now, of course, it would be easier if you didn't want to bother with all this stuff. You can just go to somebody who does this kind of thing, and they could act as an intermediary, and everything could be worked out through another person. But how many people do you know that can do that in a very reliable way? They're a very small number. And after all, it will help everybody. If we develop these things on our own, we can develop this capacity, because it would be of great service. And it's not that these personalities out there are not important. They're living beings. They have just as much pain. They have just as much need. They have just as much right to be helped as anyone else. And this energy of hysteria, this energy of pain, this energy of need that we are so objecting to is just a reaction to their incapacity to resolve that very thing that is binding them. Now, let's say you have some desire to be a great perceiver of the devas, let's just say, or anyone else higher than the devas, even up to this divine source of everything. You have this great desire. So you want to expand your sensitivity. But while you're doing that on your way, you just kick aside all of these personalities who are right before you. Now, I'm not saying, the only way to move from point A to Z is to go A, B, C, D, E. You can also go A to D to G or whatever. But naturally, it would make sense that when you are going through the process of expanding your awareness, that dealing with that which is right in front of you would be quite advantageous to your overall development. Because skipping steps, skipping important aspects, is not always the way to do things. Going the quick way is not always the best way. And taking advantage of situations is not always the most comprehensive means to get what you want. And the more you understand how helping people is helping yourself, the more you'll be able to understand the mind of God. Now, I know that was a pretty kind of cosmic statement, and I'm not even sure how it just manifested, but to a great extent, we should understand that divine love is always of service. And to be of service, expanded capacity is required, especially nowadays. Many people feel uneasy nowadays. Many people feel disturbed. There's an enormous disturbance. Why? Because within they are screaming out. They're screaming out in pain. They're screaming out for help. They're screaming out for justice. But it's not being heard. Now, we've already learned very well how to ignore images of starving people, how to ignore pleas of help. We're very expert at that. So what situation that's developing now is that ether, which connects us all now very strongly in this world, this is one world etherically, we are feeling the pain. We are feeling the scream for help very strongly. And everybody is feeling it. And the more you push it away, the more you attempt to make yourself duller. And for those who are trying to evolve, that's contradictory. So the evolved folks feel this pain more than anyone else. And obviously those who are not evolved, they don't really care. They'll just go do anything for the sake of money. They'll make wars, they'll kill. They'll do anything to create situations which make their economic situation advantageous. And we who are sensitive have to bear the brunt of this insensitivity. It's in the atmosphere, it's in the earth, it's in the vibrational field of this planet. There are beings on the other side who are warning us, who are requesting us, who are asking us to be sensitive to this, to do something about this, to counteract this. So I would like to suggest it is not an option to develop yourself sensitively. It's a requirement. Now I know I have no authority, I have no certification to say such a thing, but that's what I think. That's how I feel very strongly. So you take it for what it's worth. These questions fit within categories of topics, so I'll try to just give the category of topic and then try to discuss it, if you don't mind, because there's just so many questions. It's like unbelievable. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's great that there's so many questions. I mean, it's just fabulous that my whole screen is filled with questions. It's just that I have to deal with it, that's all. I'll start off with the personal questions that come from Argentina because, well, and everybody in Argentina is very personal. So I'll talk about the personal questions there because I think that it's important to deal with things which we have personal experience with. Okay, so there's a person down there, one of our listeners, who has lost her sister. And you know, that's a very difficult thing. When you're close with somebody and you lose them like that, I mean, that's a very difficult thing. Just from the point of view of having to deal with loss, it's already hard enough. So we can certainly extend our sympathies and support to her. Naturally, when you feel such loss, naturally, when you feel such forced separation, which is final. This is not like losing money, which you can maybe get back. It's not like losing an object, which you can buy another one to replace. You can't replace people. When they're gone. In this life, anyway. So it's very important to understand the context of losing members of family, losing people you love. You have to place this discussion within this context, because this is a very serious thing. It's not something you can deal with lightly. It's not something to just be, you know, considered to be insignificant. This is the most significant kind of a thing that can happen to you. and of all the causes of stress that you could possibly have in your life, the loss of a loved one like this, a relative or somebody very close to you like this, is number one stress. Now, in this question, the discussion is that some devotee, quote-unquote, friend of her, told her to just stop crying because your crying, your attachment, is not allowing the sister to leave, to go on, to go to the next body. And the problem is that a lot of people agree with that point of view, so she's confused, and since it's completely opposite to what I just said, I have to talk about it. Now let's analyze that comment of the so-called devotee from various points of view. The first point of view I'd like to analyze it from is the insensitivity to the living. Now, if you just consider it, here's this poor girl who's lost her sister, and it's affecting her very deeply. It's affecting her very, very deeply. And here somebody comes along and throws out some idea, stop crying, because it's not good for your sister. Let her move on to her next body. Now, in such an idea, the concept is, well, you're living. You're not so important in this situation. She's dead. So her situation has to be dealt with, whereas your situation is not so important. I mean, that's what it seems to me. Underneath, this is a basis. Now, inherent in this is some idea, like she's stuck. She's stuck because you're holding her back. So she's stuck. And you should know better. And you should just let go all your attachments. Stop crying. And let her go. Because you have capacity to deal with your situation. She doesn't. That's underlying in that idea are those assumptions. Now, it seems to me that that assumption is wrong. And that assumption is based on two types of ignorance. The first ignorance is that The sister who has departed is powerless to do anything because she's being held back by the living. That is simply not true. If the departed is held back, it's because of the departed's choice to support and take care of the loved one, or it's because there is some thing that has to be resolved first. Now, okay, you can say that because the one who is left behind is in such pain, the one who has departed feels responsible to take care of her. But that is an act of love. That is not an act that is not something they have to do. It's something they choose to do. They directly feel your pain. They directly see your pain. And because they care about you, they're trying to help you get through it. So if you artificially stop crying, if you artificially don't care, it doesn't make any difference to one who actually knows what's going on. And the departed sister actually knows. So if it was the case, and it could be, that the departed sister is caring for the one who's left behind, only when the one who's left behind really has dealt with it, really has come to a place where they can live with the situation somehow or another, not happily, but live with it, then only can the departed soul move on, if that was the case. But if it was not the case, then stopping to cry, even if it was done, of course, by accepting it, it wouldn't help either. Because if there was something that had to be resolved, if there was some communication that had to take place, that has nothing to do with the crime. So I would say, from either point of view, telling somebody to just stop crying and let them go is incorrect. It does not, it's not a good advice. It's not, it doesn't have any value to it as an advice. I would say it's just a waste of time. After all, once one departs and is on the other side, how one deals with it on that side is very much related to the people on this side. And don't forget, funerals are for the people who are living, not for the people who are dead. When we have a funeral, when we discuss about a person, when we somehow let them go through this ceremony, it is for our sake, because after all, they're already gone. It is for us to deal with, for us to accept the death. And often the departed soul will stay around and we'll say goodbye to everybody in that case, and then move on. That is often happening. So the ceremony is important, in whatever culture you do it. The grieving is important. To let the person grieve, that's important. They have to deal with it, because repressed grief is really harmful. And then to have a party afterwards. I know in most cultures there's this grieving, there's the funeral, then there's the party afterwards. It's the time when people just can just let it all go and have some relief from the grief. And in some cultures, the wilder that party is, the more successful it is considered to be. And usually after that party, after that situation, then everybody is relieved. All the departed ones move on. Those who are still there somehow move on. That's the normal situation. Grieving is healthy. Grieving is a good thing. Letting that grief manifest is a good thing. Now, somebody might be talking about excessive grief, excessive time spent grieving. That's another situation. That might be related to guilt. That might be related to some other kind of emotion which is not necessarily expressed. Now, I'm not saying it's related to this situation, but I just thought it would be complete to discuss it. In that kind of a situation, the specific emotions that are working would be, or active, would be something like, I didn't love you enough. I didn't take care of you enough. I was selfish towards you. I didn't help you in your moments of death, or I didn't help you during your life, or I lost the opportunity of contact. Some kind of guilt or some kind of enormous regret might be involved. And that is something that often departed souls wish to help you overcome. Now, that's not resolved by stopping crying, for instance. Actually, nothing is resolved by stopping crying. But everything is resolved by understanding why you are crying. Because when you understand why crying is going on, then you can deal with it. But if somebody just assumes you're just overly attached to the person and therefore you're crying all the time and holding them back, I would say that's incredibly simplistic. The idea that has to be dealt with here is to understand what is the thing which is causing the spirit to remain with you, and to appreciate it if it's a desire to support you, and if it's a desire to communicate, to listen to it, and if it's a desire to deal with it, to deal with it, but to work together with that personality, not simply to just say, okay, I stop crying, go away now, go on to your next destination. After all, what's the rush? I mean, who's in a rush here? Are you in a rush to stop crying? Are they in a rush to move on? Do you really think time is significant for the departed one, that they're looking at the watch and they've got another half an hour before they got to move on, otherwise fill in the blank? Just think about that. Is there some big rush that the departed has to move on? This is such a human idea. It's ridiculous. We can't waste time. We're wasting their time. Well, they don't live in that kind of time. So what do we care about their time when they don't have that same consideration? It's our time. And we're grieving. We don't think it's a waste of our time. So all in all, I would say that advice is about as insensitive advice as you can give. I would say it's based in some incomplete understanding of some philosophy that there's no realization behind. Now, that situation is one born of love. Love between people. Sometimes there are situations where we feel, I'm moving on from that question, where this subtle kind of contact is very disturbing, and it's not something that we can really deal with. Now, there's a lot of questions in these questions which are dealing with how do you deal with sensitivity? After all, you may start becoming sensitive to stuff that you can't deal with. It's too much for you to deal with. It's over your capacity to deal with. And these are valid points. Now, naturally, when I was giving that discussion before, I presented it in such a positive kind of way, as if, you know, you can deal with any problem of sensitivity, you don't have to worry about it, and that somehow I do that too. Well, that's not right. I have the same problems you have. Oversensitivity is a problem too. After all, people who are very sensitive have an impossible time riding on buses, on trains, especially airplanes, where you're just stuck in these small spaces with lots of people and their energies are just blasting out in this small space and reverberating in that space, and you're just being bombarded and you're just losing your mind. And you just want to disappear somehow or another because you've got strange energies, you've got heavy energies, you've got impossible energies. You've also got psychic vampires who are just sucking your energies. You've got every conceivable kind of energy out there, and it's just very difficult to deal with. And it's very difficult to deal with that. The best way to deal with it is not to get into that situation, but it may not always be possible. Now, people will tell you, put up a wall, put up an energy barrier, blah, blah. Yeah, sure. Try and do that when you're jammed into an airplane. And it doesn't work like that. And then some people say, just curl everything up into yourself like a little bug that rolls up into itself and protects itself like that. Usually you just end up getting stepped on. Others say, just go to sleep and forget about the whole thing. But who can sleep when all this is going on? And then still others say, well, the best way to deal with it is to talk to everybody around you. Just interact with them so they calm down and everything is cool and you've got a nice friendly atmosphere. Yeah, that's also very difficult. Oh, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine. What do you do? Well, I'm a Christian. I don't believe animals have soul. I cut them up into little pieces and eat them. Oh, how interesting. And what do you do? Well, I don't do that. You can get into such trouble trying to be friendly in closed environments where you can't just kind of move away. Can you imagine you have such a conversation like that in the first 5 minutes of a 12-hour flight? It's like you may as well condemn yourself to solitary confinement. Anyway, I'm using extreme examples, but you get the point. Sometimes you can't avoid these situations, so you just have to deal with it with a combination of anything and everything so that you can get your way through somehow or another. Absorb yourself into a book so deeply you're totally absorbed in the book or in the movies or in music or in anything, or go with people and just communicate with your own people or do something. There are things you can do, of course. So we have a responsibility to ourselves to not allow ourselves to be victimized by these energies, to not allow ourselves to be overwhelmed by these energies. So according to our strength and capacity, we should understand what we are capable of doing and what we are not capable of doing. So one has to basically deal as one can. It's not like there are any formulas for perfectly finding your way through this world. And therefore, sometimes you just have to lock yourself up in your own place and shut out the world, or go to the forest and sit with nature and shut out the world otherwise and just absorb the goodness, or come before the deities and just absorb their beautiful energy and just shut out the world otherwise. And to go through life in the best possible way you can, step by step. Now, there is another category of, well, not really a category, of those who are departed and of those who have not been able to deal with their situations. There are some who are extremely frustrated, extremely angry souls. In their lives, they have cultivated enviousness, they have cultivated selfishness, they have cultivated exploitation of others, and they carry those qualities with them on the other side. And sometimes such people target others just because they can, especially those who are sensitive to them. They're targeting those who they can cause difficulty to because they just really want to do so. And there are a lot of such people who just can't deal with anything and just have to take it out on those who are still living. There are. It's not like, you know, we should just say there's some fairyland where such negativity and evil doesn't exist. Well, it does. I mean, if you want to call it evil, you can also call it just undeveloped and frustration and anger and whatever. And amongst such personalities are those who have just given up hope of trying to move anywhere. They're stuck there. They don't know how to go back. They don't know how to move forward. They don't know how to do anything. So they just also spend their time trying to exploit you, as they exploited others in this lifetime, for somehow or another enjoying something. And somehow or another they want to use you for sense gratification. This kind of a personality is usually the one who gives a bad name to those on the other side. And because they are so obnoxious, we kind of like categorize, we fall into this trap of just categorizing everybody over there as just, you know, just the horrible ghost, get rid of them. Well, that's also natural because the experience is just so unpleasant that one would feel like that, who's still living. So how do you deal with such persons? Well, ignoring them is not necessarily going to work. It might. They might move on, but then you've just passed the problem on to someone else. You could agree with them, and then you're somebody's slave. You could scream in fear and become victimized. Or you could capture them and burn them up and send them away, because that's the only way to deal with such persons, ultimately. Of those four things, the first three don't need any discussion, because one already does that naturally. The fourth one needs some conscious action. And if you have done those exercises and techniques, which are in the HarryMedia.net forum, if you've become somewhat expert at feeling energy, then you will be able to just gather up such beings to squish them into some ball or whatever, and just shoot them away, burn them up, and just let them out of here. But you have to have some power to do that. You have to have some capacity to do that. That's a bit, shall we say, advanced technique, but it's possible for everybody to do. You have to just get to that point. Otherwise, you can also learn the art of ignoring, of insensitivity to such kind of energies, to just simply neglect it. That also is a very good technique. The same way as if you were next to somebody who physically was manifesting such things while they were alive, you were to simply go away from such persons, ignore them completely, not let them affect you. You can do the same exact thing to such energies. Now, I know it's easy for me to say it. It's much harder to do it when you don't have the experience. I know that. I'm aware of that. But what else can I tell you? Should I just say, oh, scream and run the other direction? Now, another question I've been given here is why is it that mystic capacities are sometimes available in a person and sometimes not? Sometimes they come like a flash and sometimes they go. Why is that? Now, my answer would be that I think somebody might think like that, but that could be because they are not allowing themselves to manifest their mystic capacities at their own will, or they haven't really developed them yet, and they're still just getting a taste now and then. Let's use the example of somebody who's very strong, yeah? They have great strength in their arms. Now, they don't use that strength all the time. When they're eating, they don't crush the fork. They don't, you know, when they're trying to pick up a glass, they don't crush the glass. They use their strength appropriately when it's needed. When it's time to pick up the desk, rah, they pick up the desk. That's the appropriate time to use the strength. I remember when I was first learning about these things from a lady who was encouraging me to develop my capacities, I complained in the same way. I said, you know, we're too sensitive all the time. It's driving me crazy. Don't know what to do. She said, you have a switch in the back of your neck. It's like a light switch. When it's up, your capacities are on. And when you push it down, you turn your capacities off so that you can live in the world. So you have your own built-in security circuit, which can go on and off. Just remember to use it. Because if you have capacity, then you can use it when you want to. That's the nature of capacity, that it's under your control. Otherwise, it's not your capacity if it's out of control. Now, I've also been asked here that we have these responsibilities when we have developed these capacities. And yes, we have. I have given a lecture maybe, I guess maybe it was last year now, I don't remember really, about the ethics behind all of this, that one has to live by these ethics. Because if you don't live by the ethics, your power will turn, I'm sorry to use the word, but the dark side, you know, like in Star Wars, you can turn towards the dark side and become a problem. You're no longer a solution, you're a problem. And therefore, the ethics has to be used properly. You have to work with ethic. And part of the ethic is not to think of yourself like God. To only, even God doesn't do this, but, you know, people think like this. To only be of service where you are requested to be of service. Because if you are not wanted, you are not asked to come into somebody's energy field, don't. Stay out of it. Don't think of yourself as so superior that you can determine as you like other people's lives. Sensitivity means you're sensitive to their energy, their desires, their requests. That's part of the ethic of sensitivity. Now, this is very important because without that kind of ethic, you can find yourself in a situation where you think of yourself as much more than you actually are, which usually ends up in your becoming less than you can be later on. Now, sometimes we wonder, what's the benefit of all? What's anyway the benefit of connecting with such beings on the other side or any beings anywhere? Why should we even bother doing that? And that's a good question. Well, if you don't see any reason to do so, then obviously you shouldn't bother trying to do so. You have to have a reason to do anything in this world. Usually, people have some kind of motivating factor in their lives. Let's say somebody's been trying to contact you. Some energy has been trying to connect with you. It's important for you to decide whether or not that's important for you to interact with. And if so, that's a motivating factor. And sometimes a person feels a need for knowledge or feels a need for understanding, needs to connect to a higher source of inspiration. That's very motivating. And sometimes people are just sensitive, and people who are departed and need help just come and say, "Help me." And those who are loving and wish to be of service have a very hard time turning down a call for help. And that is a motivating factor. Now, somebody's asking me if people who are in between life are in a transit stage. Is this really just a transit stage? And actually, I was very much trying in my discussion not to call it a transit stage, because every stage of life, every single situation is as present as any others and therefore just as important. So I wouldn't really like to use the word, it's only a transit. But the word transit really means you are moving from one more or less stable situation to another more or less stable situation. Just like when you're moving from one room to the other, you're considered to be in transit from that room to that room. But that doesn't mean your quality of life is any different while you're walking in the hallway. So this going from one life to another, this transitory phase, is only called a transitory phase because we who are in one life think of it as moving to another. So we call that period transitory. But it's really just as valid a period as the one we're in right now, which is also transitory. So I guess it's all just a description of the relativity of existence, that everything's relative and we define things according to how we see it at the moment. Because from the point of view of that person who may be together with his soul group in the in-between time, he thinks, finally, I'm back in the real place and these lives I'm going through are transitory. There's another question here about people might claim to be psychic, might claim to have extrasensory capacities, and may actually not have it in the way they think, or may be giving us information which could be harmful to us. And how do you distinguish? How do you deal with it? Well, let's talk first about the totally bogus personality, somebody who doesn't have any capacity and just says anything. Very rapidly, people figure that out. I mean, that's kind of obvious. You may as well walk up to anybody in the street and say, "Tell me my future," and they'll say, "You'll become an oil millionaire. Tell me what's going to happen in a week." Oh, you realize very rapidly this person's useless. So the bogus, totally bogus personality, we just push them aside. That's not what we want to talk about. Let's talk about those who have some capacity. Now, that's a very kind of like slippery ground. That's a slippery ground. That's a difficult situation to deal with. There are other forms of divination, it's called, that fall into this category, and that falls into another question. For example, using a pendulum to spell out words, or Ouija boards to spell out messages, and get all kinds of interesting information that way. Now, generically speaking, people who get some information, but not a lot of information, are those who don't really have a clear connection to some useful sources of knowledge. So they connect to those who also are in, shall we say, a less clear capacity to see, and they get little bits and pieces of a broader picture. So they speak about some small aspect of a broader picture, or they get confused messages and are confused about how they express it. Now, any one of us has a wealth of information connected to us that can be cosmic in nature and can be microcosmic in nature, because we can span, if you see it in different ways, all of that space. Cosmically, we could speak about our connection to the Supreme. We can talk about our connection to all of the souls we've connected to throughout our entire existence. We can talk about our connections in our soul groups into various demigods who may have had connection with us at one point, somewhere back in eternal time. I mean, you can go nuts talking about it. And similarly, you can talk about the microcosmic existence, about each of our cells and the way these cells are related with energy and the way we as a body are related with others in every single moment of the day. There's a wealth of information in between. I mean, after all, there's a lot to talk about. If you go to maybe 20 different psychically empowered, sensitive people, you might get 20 different pieces of the puzzle. Some of the information might overlap, and maybe not. Maybe people see things in ways which you would never imagine. And then again, you might get a confused piece of information here and a confused piece of information there. And maybe somehow it overlaps with truth. That makes things very difficult. But only the maintainer of the matrix has all the information. So that means you, just like when you talk to people, when you talk to somebody, they tell you something, you have to take it for what it's worth and try to verify it in your own way. And when you get that knowledge, you make it your own, then it's really something valuable. Otherwise, maybe later it'll be valuable or maybe never. So always one has to be aware of the information and judge it, consider it, understand it according to one's own experience and capacity and work with it. But as far as techniques where you spell out messages, now far be it from me to say it's not good, and I don't think I would say that. But I would say take it with a grain of salt.
You wouldn't say it's not good?
No, far be it from me. That means that's an expression that means that who am I to say it's not good? I would never say it's not good. But I would say take it with a grain of salt, which means that, you know, be very careful about what you get, you know, always judge it and consider it and don't take it as an absolute, you know. And if you have the sensitivity to allow a pendulum to spell out a message, you would have the same sensitivity, if you developed it, to hear the message directly, because it means someone wants to communicate with you. But when you can communicate directly, it's much easier to understand when there's some trickery involved. If you're doing spelling one letter at a time, and you just have you're just wondering what's going to be the message, you're totally open to trickery. And I'm not saying that it is trickery, but you are more open to it than if you can challenge the source, if you can interact with your source, if you can feel the source and understand whether the source has anything to offer you of value or you're just being led into something dangerous for you. Now, another question is about in childhood. Sometimes in childhood we feel, we see, we can communicate, we have this connection with departed entities, and we don't like it. That also encourages us to repress this capacity. It's not only our parents or the society around us. We sometimes just feel uncomfortable by it, and so we repress it ourselves to come to the ignorance is bliss platform. Because children, they don't like that kind of a thing. It's like, well, who are you? They don't even like strangers in their room, what to speak of disembodied beings. So this is natural.